This is I Hate the News, the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. It is November 19th, 2024. I hadn't planned the show to be about budget economics, but that's what happened. We'll have numbers, which if you stack them up, will tell you that the precipice arrives in 2026, and fixes may have to wait for 2027, the year after the gubernatorial election. Meanwhile, progressive groups are organizing to push the Democratic governor and the Democratic legislature to deliver on promises made. We have a report on progressive groups AIM in Montgomery County, PATH in Howard County, and ACT in Anne Arundel County coming together in a mega coalition to push their priorities. The University of Maryland's Artificial Intelligence Interdisciplinary Institute has opened 40 new faculty searches, giving the state a leg up in the digital tech sector, where it has lagged relative to biotech. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam LeGrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own planning board commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index. David Romans is a budget analyst with the Maryland Department of Legislative Services. And here he is presenting budget forecast numbers to the state's Spending Affordability Committee, the apex body of legislators who set the parameters of the new state budget, which will be presented to the 2025 General Assembly session early next year.
But remember, this budget problem is not being driven by a recession. Being driven by a somewhat stagnant economy and by our spending ambitions. By fiscal 2030, the final year of our forecast that we'll be presenting, we're showing the state only having enough revenue to cover 84% of the expenses that we're projecting the state to incur. That is the largest gap that we have seen in the last 20 years. It is a more significant gap than we saw during the Great Recession. So this is a significant challenge. It's the result of spending growth growing about 6% a year over the next 5 years, while revenues are projected to grow only 3% a year. And that reflects that we've been in a relatively stagnant period in terms of the Maryland economy. We're growing, but very, very slowly. We have not seen a lot of employment growth. We do have very low unemployment, but just not seeing much employment growth. And that's depressing our revenues a little bit. On the spending side, the General Assembly has made a number of commitments in recent years, most notably the K-12 enhancements, or known as the blueprint, that continue to be rolled out, and they drive a lot of the growth in costs throughout the next 5 years. We are also seeing at the same time growth in Medicaid. We've seen much higher than expected costs in Medicaid in the current year and in fiscal 24. We're also seeing a great deal of growth in demand for the state's child care subsidy program, which has grown at an enormous rate over the last couple of years. So all those additional spending pressures are leading to spending growing much faster than the revenues. And then you overlay that with the results of the election, which present concerns for Maryland's economy, as there's been much discussion about reductions in the federal workforce or relocation of federal agencies outside of the greater Washington region, which obviously would be harmful to the Maryland economy. And there's also the risk of some level of federal cutbacks in aid going to state and local governments, which again will present challenges to the state of Maryland. We take in about $19 billion of federal funding in our state budget each year.
To put all this in perspective, keep in mind that Maryland's state budget comes in three parts and a fourth category. The general fund, from which most of state government spending happens. The Transportation Trust Fund, which both receives and spends transportation-related money, including expenses to maintain roads, bridges, and transit. The capital budget, which is about funding construction and new large projects. The fourth is a category because it includes several special purpose funds. For example, part of the gambling and lottery taxes go toward the education fund. But when those funds cannot meet the spending commitments, the general fund needs to fill in the gap. Same for the Transportation Trust Fund, which is underwater. More likely, projects will be shelved. So what's the thinking about fixing all of this? I asked Brian Sears of Maryland Matters, who follows state economic issues closely.
There is a rainy day fund. It is currently, I think, at about $2.5 billion in cash sitting in an account. That is 10% of revenues. We only have to have in that account 5% of revenues. They have, the legislature and the previous governor really worked hard to bolster, you know, to bolster that account a little bit, you know, in case there was a rainy day. The problem is once you spend that money, you've spent that money. And it doesn't leave you with a lot of options later. And so you probably want to be careful about how much you spend. They've dipped into it. They dipped into it this year for the current budget to the tune of about $300 million, I think, which is what they have available to them. They have roughly $2.5 billion sitting in an account. They can play with that. They can move some money around. They have about $250 million, $300 million in what they call PAYGO bond, you know, PAYGO for capital projects. Rather than borrowing through bonds to pay for a project where you're paying interest, they opted to pay for some of these projects with cash. These projects have not necessarily started, so they the cash is sitting there, but they haven't started using it because the projects haven't really gotten underway. One option they have is to take some of the borrowing authority that is already pre-authorized, shift that into those projects, take the cash out and apply that to what they've, you know, to what they've got going on for the current budget year. After that, there are things you might have to start looking at: revenue enhancements, a nice euphemism for taxes, and maybe even cuts. The one thing that is clear is that they will not be able to cut their way necessarily out of this problem. One other thing I should mention that has been talked about, Sunil, is the possibility of lengthening the time in which we implement the Blueprint for Excellence in Education. It's not something that education advocates want to talk about, but lawmakers are talking about it and whether or not it's possible to, you know, to stretch this out and implement the costs over a longer glide path. That would, in some cases, work well for the counties who are also starting to feel the pinch and don't have the revenues and some of the available tools that the state has.
With lengthening the blueprint deadline, are lawmakers talking specific things, or is this like a very generic discussion?
I think right now it's a very generic discussion.
What about tax increase?
The governor and the Senate president didn't say no tax increases. They gave us more of a squishy Supreme Court definition of obscenity kind of tax increase answer, which is there has to be a high bar. This certainly seems to open up the conversation a little bit. I think there are going to be some senators that will want to have a conversation about some kind of tax increase. I think we're going to see the Fair Share Act come back, which is a whole bunch of separate tax increases that have been cobbled together, including changing the way that we tax corporations.
What is your expectation now about the Key Bridge rebuild going forward?
Back when Congress met before the election, I believe they passed legislation that contained a provision that bumped Maryland up to 90% for this project. And so I think there is the expectation that it will be 90%. Is it 100%? You know, I don't know. I mean, but that's what Joe Biden promised. The problem is that funding gets pushed until after the new Congress and the new president are sworn in. And who knows with any of the other things that have been promised, like whether it's the FBI headquarters. I had a Republican, Steve Hershey, who's the minority leader in the Senate, who said that he believes, based on what he understands and what he's watching in Washington, that when the Trump administration comes in, the red line is dead.
Brian Sears, thank you for keeping watch.
Thanks for having me.
Against the backdrop of tight finances and uncertainties from a new federal government, three well-known progressive groups, Action in Montgomery, known as AIM, People Acting Together, PATH in Howard County, and Anne Arundel Connecting Together, ACT, have come together to form a new coalition, Maryland Just Power Alliance. They gathered last Sunday, November 17th, bringing over 700 people at the Wild Lake Interfaith Center in Columbia, Maryland.
ACT in Anne Arundel, AIM in Montgomery, and PATH in Howard County have been strategically building relationships too. We have been working together for several years in different ways, training, actions, working together in the State House to help pass legislation on housing and climate justice. And today we are launching our collective and our intention to formalize it. ACT, AIM, and PATH are all members of our larger People's Power organization across six states, the Just Power Alliance. Woo! We have just recommitted to fighting for the most vulnerable and safeguarding our participatory democracy. This means we need to continue to build the relational power to identify issues, be at the table to help craft legislation, build the political will to pass it, and then make sure it is implemented in ways that truly benefit people's day-to-day lives.
Renter rights, safe housing, and eviction for cause alone have long been progressive objectives. But increasingly, there is realization that more homes have to be built to lower housing costs.
Good afternoon. My name is Adele Guerin. I'm from Anne Arundel County, Arkandov. I've lived there for 31 years, and I've been an educator for 33. The issue of housing is near and dear to my heart. As an educator in majority low-income schools, I've visited students and families who live two to three families in a small home. For the last 5 years, I've had four different teachers at the beginning of their careers live with me because their pay was too low to live in Anne Arundel County. My husband and I opened up our house to each of them so that they can be close to their work and the communities that they serve. I'm a mother of three grown kids. None of them can afford to live in the county that they grew up in. In Maryland, we have a housing shortage of nearly 100,000 units. This lack of housing makes every home more expensive and makes competition to buy or rent a home fierce. This often leaves our neighbors with the least financial resources in the dust. We are calling on Governor Moore to lead by creating housing protection goals for Maryland, goals that would require each county and city to create more housing and to create housing that is affordable.
That call out to Maryland Governor Wes Moore turned out to be a complaint.
One leader is not present with us this afternoon, and since Governor Moore isn't here today, we would like you to instead use social media to send him a message and ask him to support our climate and housing policies. I would like to also remind him and those that work with him, these are policies he ran in support of. So I'm going to do a quick three-step process of how to make a social media post for a politician. Turn to page 3 in your packet with instructions. There is a QR code. Once you scan the QR code, we're asking Governor Wes Moore and saying that we're here with over 700 members from Maryland Just Power Alliance, calling on him to lead. Make those selfies. I love it. I love it. I love it. Take those pictures. Tag the governor. Hashtag Maryland Just Power Alliance. Tag your organization. Tag any delegates and senators that are here. And make our voices heard on social media. Not just today, but for all of this week. We want his mentions to be full.
Later, I spoke with Cynthia Marshall, who is the executive director of both AIM in Montgomery and PATH in Howard County, as well as one of the architects of the Maryland Just Power Alliance.
Up until this year, we have been focusing mostly on the pre-K in Montgomery County, but we've also realized that much of the funding, of course, comes from the state. And so we need to work at the state as well as local level. And I think part of why we also want to work at the state level is we know that the state and local go hand in hand. And so if we can provide political will at the local level for councils, for parks and planning commissions, for the county executive, and work at the state level with the governor, the state legislature, we're going to be able to work from both ends and be more effective.
You had 700 people there. Around 20 elected officials, but conspicuous by his absence was Governor Moore, who I would imagine is a primary object of your organizing. Did you invite him? What's going on there?
So we invited him. Our first invitation to him was in June this year, and he chose not to come. He did come and meet with us in 2022 when he was running for office and committed to working with us on our goals.
But he hasn't since getting into office. Is that correct?
Correct. We have not. We've worked with his staff, but we have not worked with him.
Do you find that he's generally supportive of your goals, or he is managing a big fiscal crisis at this moment.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, two of the bills that we supported last year were from the governor's office. And so we have been in alignment with some of the issues that he's working on. And right now our understanding is that he is figuring out which housing goals he's going to be working on this year. And so it may be that we will be working closely with him this upcoming legislative session. We're just not sure. They're still making those decisions.
So you've asked for housing targets. How does target and setting targets help with actual production?
So ultimately, there does need to be a mechanism for enforcement of those targets. The state of California has a few different strategies that they've employed and there can be either carrots or sticks that are used in terms to create incentives for local jurisdictions. But the problem is if there are no goals and if there are no incentives, then every jurisdiction would rather have the housing built someplace else, and then no housing gets built. And then we end up with the rising housing costs that we have seen in our state.
This is a demand that actually may not have a big fiscal impact. So you may actually get it, but...
We hope so.
But your other demands, especially with respect to pre-K provision, mm-hmm. That has huge fiscal implications.
Yes, it does. And it is also a driver of the economy. Having universal pre-K would provide more workers in the economy as well, which is why the Chamber of Commerce has been supportive of expansion of pre-K.
Maryland is going to extend the life of some coal plants. Four in particular, Brandon Shores, Wagner, there are four plants that were slated to be closed down but cannot be closed down because that would really create a shortage. We are also looking at demand going up but production not going up, And so, you know, electricity rates are slated to go up significantly, and it's going to hurt many of members of all your three organizations. Mm-hmm. So there is a balancing act here of whether you allow more power production, even with gas, and gas is the quickest addition to power, or do you say, no, we'll pay the high electricity prices? Where is the where is that balance?
Many of the new electric appliances, the heat pumps, the stoves, will be much more efficient. And so there will be some cost saving there. There are also retrofits that can be done to people's homes to tighten them up and make them more fuel efficient. Those can help also lower costs for individual households.
Okay, so even if the electricity price per kilowatt is high, if they use less, then they're going to... Okay,
that's right.
Okay, given these big objectives, the three groups, AIM in Montgomery, PATH in Howard, and ACT in Anne Arundel, appear to be coming together in some kind of unified form. What is the state on that unification?
We are in a process of figuring out what that will formally look like. But right now we do share staff and we do share some resources together and are building relationships with some statewide entities like this teachers union, statewide teachers union, and other groups to figure out how to work more statewide.
Cynthia Marshall, thank you.
Thank you.
While the Maryland House of Delegates seems ready to consider new taxation, the governor and the Senate president have hung their hopes on an economic rebound. The timeline with the budget cliff is challenging, but probably not fatal. If the Moore administration can go into the 2026 election without a major new tax, though vehicle fees, among other revenue sources, are already up, the political clock would be reset, and the second term is a different thing. For the time being, however, the governor's office does not seem to have a point person on economic development and growth. Close observation suggests that housing policy is carrying some of that economic development burden. But it will be hard to move local governments to allow significant and large-scale rezoning, without which it is hard to imagine the animal spirits of home building capitalism unleashing. And even then, the interest rate environment might override. Greater Washington, the urbanist advocacy group, got the names of 1,607 Montgomery County residents who attended recent listening sessions on possible rezoning and compared the list with the public voter file. The results were not surprising. An overwhelming number of white and older residents attended, but also a huge overrepresentation from one single zip code, 20815 in Chevy Chase, where homes sell for millions of dollars. There is further bad news close by in Bethesda, where Marriott, one of the few non-biotech firms to be headquartered in Montgomery County, decided to lay off 800 mostly mid and higher-level employees. In Prince George's County, which stands to lose the new FBI headquarters that the Biden administration had promised the state, some good news. The University of Maryland's Artificial Intelligence Interdisciplinary Institute has opened 40 new faculty searches in AI. University of Maryland already ranks highly at number 5 as a research institution in AI. A big investment like this and the talent it will attract in faculty and graduate students could help the state build a new area of knowledge and expertise that could drive economic development. Compared with Northern Virginia, the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C. have for decades been focused on biotech. Now, finally, a big foray into digital tech. That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Adama Gay, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. See you next time.
A trophy left by a stray cat. I prick my finger on the sharp part and say the F word to and at myself and just throw it away. Evidence lacking any fingerprints. I'll be wearing my hair shirt. I'll be holding